poke this and speak in here. Right. Good morning. It's really lovely to be here. As Nick said, I've known them for a long time. We did have a conversation with Nick and Claire and said very early on, are you rushing into getting married? You've not known him very long. But it's worked very well. No, they're great. They're good fun, and we've known them for a very long time. And it's a real privilege to come and talk to you this morning. Mental health is a massive area. There's an awful lot of stuff, and people study for years and years to get qualifications in it. There's a national shortage of psychiatrists in the UK at the moment, and part of the concern is it takes 9 years to train a doctor to be really proficient in managing mental health problems. So what I'm going to do today and what I'd like to do this morning is just start a conversation and actually get us thinking about what does mental health mean, how does that work, what's our role as a church, as Christians, as individuals. So I want to look at what the current mental health picture is, what mental health looks like in the media, have a brief look at the overview on what causes mental health problems. What does the Bible say about it? What's God's view on all of this? And what's the church's role? So quite a lot of things to fit in, so bear with me. Let's try not to drop anything. Lovely. No, none of these bits seem to be working. Could you put us on to the next slide, please? Thank you. So, first bit. Current picture of mental health. I'll keep talking. We all have mental health, okay? There's quite a good report was done this year. Technology's fighting back. Yeah, never work with children, animals, or technology. Would appear. So basically, we all have mental health. Often we think of mental health as a negative thing, but actually we all have it. There's quite a good website that hopefully will work at some point, mentalhealth.org.uk, and each year there is a Mental Health Awareness Week looking at various things. And this year's theory, one was quite interesting. It was around surviving or thriving, which was quite an interesting way of looking at mental health. There's a questionnaire in there that you can go on and actually look at your own mental health. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it somewhere in between? Quite an interesting thing. And they did a very big survey nationally looking at mental health, and they found that 13% of the population, those who responded, had good mental health. And that's quite good, 13%. However, what that says is that 87% didn't have particularly good mental health. So how does that all work? And interesting, when we're talking about thriving, on page 9, this is a secular document. This is put out to the whole secular mental health world. And on page 9, when they talk about thriving, they talk about a positive sense of emotional and spiritual well-being that respects the importance of culture, equality, and mental health. That's a real shift, that actually we're saying that spirituality and emotional well-being is really important. So quite exciting that actually people are starting to realise that we are made up of mind, body and soul, and actually the church has a place to play within supporting mental health difficulties. So what we do know is that 1 in 4 people in the UK experience a mental health problem each year. Yep. Thanks, Jonathan. That's quite a lot. And actually in England, 1 in 6 adults have a common mental health problem each week. That's a lot of people. You look at the number of people in here and you think, actually, that's quite a proportion of people that are impacted by common problems. 4 in 10 people in the population experience depression. 25% of people have actually had a panic attack. And 50% of all mental health problems are diagnosed before the age of 14. So there's a lot of things going on around mental health. When we look at mental health in the media, the Time to Change campaign has been really quite an impactive one. This is a campaign led by Mind and Rethink Mental Illness. And it's got lots of information about looking at myths and facts and decreasing stigmatisation. And what they've done, they began in 2007, and they do an annual report each year. They do lots of questionnaires, lots of bits and pieces. And what they found over the years, in the last 10, 11 years that things have been running, that 3.5 million adults have actually improved their attitudes to mental health. We don't see it quite so much as a very black and white, something that somebody else has got, or it's a problem, or it's stigmatised. We have got a long way to go, because there are too many people that feel isolated, ashamed, worthless, and unwanted. And that was why I got Katie to read the verses from Matthew, when Jesus talks about the parable of the sheep and the goats, and the comment in verse 40 where he says, "Whatever you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you did for me." Very often within our society, there's quite a lot of sections that get marginalised, and mental health is certainly one of those that we don't always understand but can have very strong views on. So our attitude as Christians to mental health really does matter, because it matters to God. And Jesus wants us to be supporting and working with those that have issues and problems. So Time to Change has been quite impactive. Heads Together is another one of the big campaigns you've probably heard of. This is the Princes William and Harry and Kate have been doing a lot about pulling groups of people together and putting mental health on the agenda, both early on and all the way through. One of my friends was fortunate enough to get invited to Buckingham Palace. They work with a mental health charity, and they got to go along and meet them. And these guys are doing a really good thing about publicly saying mental health is something we can talk about. It's something that's okay. It's not the end of the world, which is good. So things are shifting in the media, and you'll hear lots of things in the media about mental health. The other thing slightly closer to home is around a charity called Standing in the Gap. 4 years ago, I went to a women's conference up in Bradford. I, as Nick says, I'm a health visitor by background. I've been doing that for the last 15 years. And 4 years ago, I was working on quite a busy caseload in a rural area and was looking into doing a master's in child and adolescent mental health. Felt that was the right thing to do. And it was at this conference, I was really praying and saying to God, how's this all going to work? And is this the right thing? And will I get any funding from the NHS? And how do I fit it in with two kids and all this, that and the other? I felt very, very clearly that God spoke to me at that conference and said, you need to do this course. The NHS will part fund it, which is fine. And when you finish this course, I want you to start a charity. I want you to call it Standing in the Gap, and I want you to work with kids with mental health problems. So I sort of went, oh, wow, that's quite a lot of things to be told in one go. And it was quite a significant sort of conversation that you go, wow, God, that's quite incredible. Okay, I'll do my part, you do your part. So I got on the course. It was very helpful to know what I wanted to do with it at the end of the course, because actually a lot of the modules that I did, I geared to working with 0 to 11s. I got quite a lot of experience with 0 to 5, so looked at what my gaps were. The NHS did part fund me, which at the current thing within NHS structures and budget restrictions and everything else is completely miraculous. And they gave me the study leave to go off and do it, which was amazing. And we started a charity called Standing in the Gap. We've got 5 trustees. We had our first meeting in April. We are now a properly registered charity, which is a few more pieces of paper and a bit more heartache than we anticipated, but we've gone through that process, which is really exciting. And our aims are that we want to help children 0 to 11 manage big emotions. So fear, anxiety, anger, and bereavement. That we want to be on the early end of things where parents go, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's normal, I don't know what's going on, how do I manage this? And as part of doing my dissertation, I did some work and some research in Banbury. So we worked with 3 primary schools and worked with families and kids. The last time national statistics were done on 0 to 11s was 2004, which is an entire generation ago of children, if you think of the things that have changed since 2004. We've got internet, we've got much more access to things, they're increasing cyberbullying, there's all sorts of problems that have happened, but we're still using our statistics to set up our services. We know that the services aren't good, we know there's a big gap between children that have problems and children that get into problems, and very much felt that God wanted us to fill that gap, to stand in that gap, for 0 to 11s and offer early intervention stuff and bits from there. So we started applying for some funding. We are setting our website up, which should be up and running in January, and then we're applying for some biggish funding to actually be able to set up an office in Banbury and do practical one-to-one work. Huge buy-in from the schools, lots of enthusiasm, people are definitely saying, yes, we need you. So please do pray that God opens the doors at the right time. So far, we've really seen his hand upon lots of different things, but actually, it's that next practical bits that we need prayer and wisdom for from there. And Claire is one of our trustees, so please do pray for the charity and ask her how we're getting on, and she'll be able to update us, which is good. So that's mental health in the media. Good stuff. Right, so mental health, what causes it? Things from there. I like a good challenge, you know, let's see if we can explain some things. The best way I can find of when you're explaining what mental health is to people is actually to do it as a comparison. So look at it as if it was a headache and how we would manage different things of a headache. So if you have a mild headache, it can be for lots of different reasons. You've not had enough to eat, you've not had enough to drink, you've not had enough fresh air, you've not had enough sleep. You know, lots of us get minor headaches and generally go, oh yeah, I'm a bit coldy, I'm a bit this, I'm a bit that. And the mild end of things are things that get managed with a little bit of self-help. You know, have a bit more sleep, have some more to drink, get your eyes tested, look at various different things. And they can be managed generally quite well without too much support or help from everybody else. So that's your first level of headache. Your moderate headache, there might be a particular issue going on. So it might be that you've bumped your head or bashed it or you've got concussion or you're responding to a particular sort of event that happened. So this is the one where you actually need a little bit more support, a little bit more help. You might need to go to A&E, you might have them needing to check your visual responses, check your blood pressure, give you some painkillers, support and assist you and do some things with that. So that one's not necessarily going to go away on its own, but does need a little bit of a higher level of support. And then on the severe end with headaches, this is where it gets a lot more complicated and you're looking at potential changes in your body. So is it that there's a bleed there? Is it that there's something in your brain that there shouldn't be with tumours or other things? And that's actually what's causing this headache on the severe end of things that really does need medical intervention and people to assist and support you. So if we use the analogy and work through and look at sort of mental health, the things can be very similar, that on the sort of mild end, we do get the different bits and pieces. So we're looking at low mood, anxiety, stress, you know, looking at some of our statistics that we're saying 4 in 10 people experience depression, 1 in 6 adults has a common mental health problem. This end of things is the end where they're not severe, but they're a problem. They can be difficult, they can start to impact on life. The environment plays a big impact, our genetics plays a big impact. It's really complicated on the factors that impact. But on the mild end, some of the things in your foyer out here, you've got some really great leaflets from CWR about building self-esteem, depression, anxiety. There's a whole load of them out there. And sometimes in this early stages, whether it's you, a friend, a relative, your next door neighbour, sometimes it's about getting that information. You know, we solve our headaches because we know what causes them on the mild end. Is it that I've just ran around and not been to sleep enough and I haven't eaten enough? And sometimes, because we all have mental health, there is preventative bits we need to be doing. We need to be looking after ourselves. We need to be eating and drinking sensibly, we need to be getting exercise, we need to be talking about our feelings, we need to be supporting each other. And there's a lot of things we can do as a community to support each other on this. And then moving on for your moderate mental health problems. It might be a response to an injury or event. It might be a bereavement, a trauma, a redundancy. It might be something significant's happened to people and actually they just need some help supporting that. So similarly with the headache at the moderate level, people do need help and support. They do need to talk to professionals. They do need to link in with their GP and have those conversations and work out what's useful. How do we manage the root causes of things? How can we help people do things and support them? And then moving on to the severe end, you are looking at some underlying changes in the body and some chemical imbalances. And these are the ones that really do need treatment, and actually medication is really important. What they have found that significantly changed mental health was that actually there are chemical imbalances in the brain. In the 1950s, it was the biggest breakthrough we've had in mental health when they came up with a medication called clopromazine, which enabled people to actually be treated at home. What they'd done prior to that has gone, well, we know it's something, but we don't know what it is, so we're going to take all the people that have problems and we're just going to put them somewhere else because we can't treat them. And that's where historically you had your mental asylums and all the things that now we look back and think, oh my goodness, why did we do that? But some of it's we just don't know what causes things. And as science has caught up, it's been fascinating to help understand that some of these are managed by chemical imbalances. What they've also found as well is that 50% of severe depressions get significantly better on antidepressants. And actually, the medication and the levels in the brain, there is evidence to show that actually with some of the severe end of things, there are chemical imbalances. And 70% of psychosis or schizophrenia significantly benefit from antipsychotic medication. And the remaining 30% that don't significantly have some benefit and would be very unwell. So at the severe end, these are people who need to be managed medically and supported, and that's why we have all, you know, well, we train doctors and they know an awful lot about our minds and how they work. There's a lot of things we don't know, and certainly the brain development stuff has really come on in the last 10, 15 years, and it'll be interesting to see where we are in another 10, 15 years with what we understand about how cleverly and majestically we're made. The point I'm trying to do here, as you'll see at the arrow at the bottom, is that mental health can change. The same way that our physical health can change, people can move between mild, moderate and severe and come back again. And actually, it's not as straightforward as going, you have a mental health problem, therefore I know what that is. It's more, you have a mental health problem and it could be anywhere along this spectrum. And actually, what we need to do is understand people as individuals, and they need to get the right help for them. From there. So, what does the Bible say? In Matthew 22, verses 36 to 38, they asked Jesus a question. Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in law? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like this. Love your neighbor as yourself. And all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. You know, we are in an interesting age in our society where actually there is a realization that we are mind, body, and soul, and that we need to nurture them. You know, we've got reports coming out from secular organizations saying that actually thriving involves our spiritual well-being as well. That's a real part that we can play as a church in actually looking after people. Emotionally and spiritually as well. We also need to realize that God can heal, but sometimes he doesn't. And actually, that's not about the amount of faith we've got. Paul, who was one of the greatest apostles, in 2 Corinthians 12, we know that he had an issue that wasn't healed. And actually, God chooses, God knows, God is God and we're not. And actually, sometimes healing doesn't happen. And things have to be managed from there. And actually, it's really important that we don't feel that mental health is about a lack of faith or demonic possession. But actually, as we saw on the previous slide, it's a whole range of things that impact us from there. In the Bible, Jesus healed thousands and thousands and thousands of people. When they were queuing up, there was lots of people. And a lot of the stories that are captured are the unusual. They are the sensational ones, the big ones, the ones that were different. So I'm not saying that demonic possession doesn't happen, because I certainly know that it does. But what I'm saying is let's not take a part of a story in the Bible and say that that applies to everybody with mental health problems. Because historically what we did as a society is, and things we couldn't understand, we thought that mental health problems were to do with spirituality. And that was across the board. That was across things like diabetes and heart disease and various other things. We thought it was because people didn't have enough faith. So it's not just mental health. It's just if we don't understand it, we often put things in a different box. But there is a stigma with mental health. And as science has improved, we need to be aware that there are different factors and chemical imbalances and all sorts of things. And actually, we need wisdom in how we interact. If we insist that mental health problems are spiritual, that can really be quite traumatic for people. Because basically it says if it doesn't improve, it's because your faith isn't good enough. And actually all of us want our faith to be good enough. We want to have a fabulous relationship with God, but so often it is difficult. And we don't need to be having people tell us that the reason we're not getting better physically, emotionally, or on our mental health thing is because of lack of faith. We need to be supporting and we need to be looking and helping people. Also, as Christians, as a church, we actually have a fantastic opportunity within a church to be a safe and loving place. Going back to this report, they looked at different activities when they asked people on their positive mental health and what improved mental health. And that one of them, the most significant one, was spending time with friends and family. That's what we are as a church. We are a community that can support each other, that can help each other, that can listen. You know, we don't have to have all the answers. We don't need to know what to say sometimes. Sometimes it's just nice to know that there's other people around about. I was speaking to somebody a couple of weeks ago who was really struggling with an issue. And it is really hard because we want to make it better, but sometimes it's really hard to know how to make it better. And in praying with her, I really felt that when Moses was fighting one of the battles that they were fighting, Nick can fill in the details, and he had his arms up. And when he had his arms up, they were winning. And as he got tired, his arms came down and they stopped winning. And what he needed the people around him to do was they came and they stood on either side and they held his hands up. God still won the battle. God still did the thing. But actually, he needed people around him to hold their hands up and just be there. And sometimes with mental health, that's what we need to do as a church, is just be there and hold people's hands and stand with them and say, we still love you. We still support you. We don't necessarily understand it. And God is bigger, but we will be with you. So I think it's really important that we be a church. You know, we're not clinicians, we're not therapists within church, most of us. And actually God is supreme and we have a really big option on what we can offer as a church. There's a really cool verse in the Bible that our house group leader used to quote to us quite a lot. Man looks on the outside and God looks on the heart. And that's really true. You know, it's very hard sometimes for us to stand on the outside and really understand what's going on with people. But God knows. God knows what's happening and where things are. So one of the things we can be is we can actually be really informed. These sort of leaflets are really, really good. There's a very good website called Mental Health Access Pack. And what they do is they were a couple of charities, they're Christian charities that have come together. They're called Livability and Mind and Soul. And what they offer is a framework for churches on how to support people with mental health difficulties. So if you're interested in more things, go and look at the website. I'm just about to say it on there. It is really good. There's lots of information. There's lots of support. There's lots of things that are really useful. And it explains about some diagnoses as well. So if you've got friends and family that have got a diagnosis that you don't really understand, this stuff is really quite good. And what was fascinating is they did a survey on social media about what should churches do and what should churches not do in relation to mental health. And there was a massive uptake on this. It was really, really fascinating. And what they found was what people were coming back and saying was, what you should do is don't be frightened to ask people how they are and what you can do to help. You know, you don't know where they are on that trajectory, whether they're at the mild, the moderate, or severe. But ask, how was your week? How is it going? What can I do to help? What can I do to support? What do you need? The things that came back very strongly on the do's was take time to understand what a diagnosis means. There are a lot of diagnoses, and they're very different for different people. So if one person's diagnosed with depression, that might mean one thing, and for another it might mean something quite different. So sometimes it's about having that conversation. You know, what does this look like for you? How does this feel? How can we support you? One of the things we did when we talked about it at our church was I interviewed a lady called Emma, who is lovely. She has quite a significant mental health diagnosis. She has what's called borderline personality disorder, and has been sectioned and has tried to commit suicide at least once. She's got three children. She works in a normal job. She actually works at our CAP Centre for Christians Against Poverty and goes out and works with other people. And it was a fascinating conversation with her to say, what is helpful? What works? And she came back with exactly the same as what the survey said, is prayer. Prayer is really valuable. Prayer is really important. And it's something that we as a church can do for people when they're struggling. She said so often she felt really quite isolated, but actually it was really helpful when she was really poorly that she knew that there were people who were praying. There were people who were standing there and holding her hands up and supporting her and standing with her. And for her, that made a massive difference. And she said, you know, asking, what can I do? What's going to be helpful? Over the years, we've done all sorts of different things with her. We've done meals, we've supported, we've helped with different bits. But again, it's being aware of what the need is. What the survey that the Mental Health Access Point find out around what don't to do is don't not speak to people. Don't avoid talking to somebody about their mental health because you don't know what to say. You don't need to have the answers. We just need to love them. You know, how has your week been? How's it going? What's good? What's bad? Don't assume you know how they can be helped. Came back very strongly in this survey. As we said, because there's a whole trajectory from mild through to severe, if somebody has got a diagnosis and they're on the mild end, it might be useful to have some practical stuff around, you know, go for a walk each day and do this, that and the other. They're right on the other end of the severe. That's not going to be helpful. And so often if you're not working with people professionally, it's very hard to give advice. So it's about don't just assume you know what's going to help. Listen to what people need. The other thing that came back very strongly in the survey, which what churches shouldn't do, was dismiss or belittle someone's experience. Everybody's different, everybody's individual, everybody's got their own story. We do know that environment and genetics and family upbringing and all these things have quite a significant impact on mental health, and a concept called resilience on how well people manage trauma. So it's really important that we don't compare. Oh yeah, but you know, so-and-so had that and they were fine. Or so-and-so had this or this, that and the other. What is happening for us as individuals is an individual thing. And interestingly enough, what came back on their last thing about don't do things was don't put pressure on people to attend church or ignore them if they don't. Very often people can go really up and down with their mental health. And I was talking to a lady 2 weeks ago who said one of her coping strategies when she was really low is that she'd withdraw. And she knew that. She knew that she'd withdraw, and she said what's really valuable is that when she then felt that she was in a bit of a better place and linked back in with church, was that she felt supported, that people didn't go, you know, haven't been for a while, are you all right? But actually said, it's really lovely to see you. It's really great that you're here. We really are pleased that you can make it along. And it was really fascinating hearing from her that she was fully aware that she withdrew, but she was fully aware of that made her feel awkward when she came back, and she really needed people to just be kind from there. The other thing that really came out from the discussion we had with Emma was that actually for her, she needed to get professional help. And that actually she needed to have long-term professional help. She'd worked with a counselling support for nearly 5 years, and they'd made a massive difference. So if you know people or there are concerns around mental health, please go and see your GP. Please do talk to them. When I did the interview with Emma, she was hilarious because she said, so many people I talk to, she said, tell me that they don't get on with their GP. So her comment was, you don't get on with your GP, go and find another one. There's quite a lot of them out there. This is Emma. She was great. And actually, it is really important that you find the right person to talk to. There are some fantastic organisations out there who can support you. Mind, lots of other different things. There's lots of good resources. But it's about talking. It's about finding the right support at the right stage. So I'm hoping that just a little bit of an overview of quite a complex and quite a difficult subject around mental health, that you'll take away that, you know, God has plans and purposes for each and every one of us. He loves us totally and utterly as individuals, and he wants us to be whole, whatever we have. And actually our role as part of that in our community is to be Jesus to one another, is to love and to help. And actually, whatever we do for the least of these is really important. So just to be finished, I'm just going to pray.